Blog, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Electronic artist and trailblazer, Marc Ribier. Do not miss acclaimed electronic artist and trailblazer, Marc Ribier, at Place Belle on Friday, October 21st, as part of his North American 2022 tour. Marc Ribier. Tickets available at evenco.ca. Visit www.marcribiellet.com. That's marcribier.com. For more information.
And it goes. You are tuned in to CKUT 90.3 FM on Underground Sounds. It's 8 p.m. I'm your host, the voice from the beyond, Jean Néant, with Les Transmissions du Vide. On air today, I'm joined by the incredible artist Wendy Eisenberg from Massachusetts. No, you moved to Brooklyn now, right? You get all over the place. All over the place, Wendy Eisenberg from the US will be all over the place in Ontario. Coming up, I guess our first show is Wednesday in Hamilton. We're also doing Guelph and Toronto, and we're finishing back in Montreal on October 23rd at L'Orbit, which is a venue in the Old Port. I didn't take the address with me right now, I will look it up, but anyway, introducing on air, Wendy Eisenberg. Hi!
Hello! Hi! Hi!
How are you?
I'm well. I'm waking up. It is nice. I'm waking up at 8 p.m.
You are purely in Buffalo, right? You're still there?
Yes, I'm in Rochester, actually, but...
Oh, okay.
Western New York, you know.
Great. So...
Ooh, hi.
Nice. After me. So, yeah. This tour kind of happened a bit because I think I was booking you for February, and then you kind of told me you were just in town in Buffalo or something, and I was like, oh, we should do some Ontario dates. So it just happened like that. I'm for listeners at home who... What could you expect from a Wendy Eisenberg live performance, given that you have a long range of different types of performance, playing with different people, also different dynamics in what you play, I feel like?
I mean, it's a good question, because usually I don't know, and I try to feel out the room, but I brought a really limited array of tools this time. Like, I just brought my arch top, like a beautiful jazz guitar and a tube amp, and that's it. So I'll be playing... I've been exploring this kind of space between songs and free improvisation on guitar because I do so many different things, and something of the rigid spaces between those things has been, I don't know, it's been interesting to me to see how I can kind of get through those walls. And so recently I've been trying to like play songs from all eras of my songwriting career, which is a funny idea to think that someone has a songwriting career, but... Anyway, so the songs that I've been writing over the past like 5 or 6 years, I've been trying to play them just kind of like non-chronologically or whatever, and then improvising within and through them. And so they become kind of like a site of experimentation, but fundamentally it's all organized by like songs. And so probably this tour will be like lots of songs with little explorations within them and stuff. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, no, that sounds like it's merging two of the type of performances I've seen you play. Well, I've seen you perform with you, like straight up prepared guitar, improvising with people, and then your more song material. So
it feels bridging both. It feels good. Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's so, like, I don't know. I think in order to become kind of fluent with something, like you end up committing really hard to doing that thing, like in a certain, in like a line or whatever, and you're like, oh, I'm improvising now. But I don't know, songs have so much space to just do crazy stuff and like if my interest as a songwriter is to like expand what a song can have going on in it, then like why can't it include improvisation? And it's just been so fun to like to do, and I feel like it's also like the most generous way that I can perform for people, because sometimes I'm like, if I perform songs and this is like an improv crew, is that like subversive or like is it selfish? Like,
you're,
what am I doing?
Subversive, so if you're doing the thing, if you're doing the songs at the experiment, what's all the doing? It's like back around, but like just subversive for the subversive people.
Yeah, it feels cool. I think people really, they take pleasure in songs, and they're so like directly communicative in a way that's visceral, like you kind of hinted at earlier. And it's funny because like, I think improvisation works that same way. So if I can kind of hack people's like desire to feel connected, that they kind of get easily in a song with like the direct connection of like sound and an improvisation, like it feels really powerful to combine both of these ways of accessing people.
No, I mean, I feel like even as a, I don't know, for my first shows, you know, when I used to go see big bands, and when they were like, oh, they do a show, they do the song you want to hear, but then they just be this whole new part live or something, and like, no, I want to listen to the live version because I really love the original, but there was that part and something. And so, yeah, having this remix, I guess, like, you know, that's it. In my culture, it'd be more like you have a remix more than like an improvised version, but just to like, yeah, you get the original source, but then it's broken down in a way that's completely new and unique in the moment. It's, yeah.
The other thing is, like, when you do a recording of a song, if you do it and you actually like it, you feel a way about it where you're like, this song is recorded so well. And then if you perform that, it can be enhanced by the liveness of it, but there's also a sense of, like, why didn't I just listen to it with my own context? But if you do it live in a way that's, like, specific to the space you're in and the people who are in the audience, then it can feel just so overwhelmingly present in a way that, like, you might want or not want from a lot, like the recorded version being done perfectly. People,
but I was,
I don't know. Yeah, yeah, sorry.
I was gonna say, how do you feel also about your own material? Are you someone, how does it feel to revisit that? Because, you know, a lot of people won't like move on, they're always on to the next material. I guess some people are like really attached. Like, no, especially your lyrics are so personal and it's so contextual. I'm like, what the hell does it feel to revisit songs that come from like such a different time and place?
That's a good question. I mean, yesterday in Buffalo, my friend asked me to play one of like the Boston songs, which is like a really funny question to be asked, because like so many of my songs were written like around or about my time in Boston, because it was like my mid-20s and very important time of like, who am I, kind of whatever. And so I didn't really know what he meant, but then I ended up playing like a song that I had written in like 2015 or 16. And I usually don't go back that far, but it felt as true, even though the circumstances had shifted, as it did when I wrote it. And like, that made me feel really proud of my work.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, like, I'm always trying to push and like write new songs, even though like people in my life are like, you can like chill on that. Cause like, I like keep a, I just keep myself to a really high standard and as a composer, and I just want to keep exploring. But what's been amazing about revisiting older work is seeing the different types of songs that like you as a composer kind of like lapse into, and how those song forms like emerge with you and inform each other. So yeah, like some of these songs, like I have like this weird subgenre within my songs of things that have drones in them by accident. Like, even I'm going totally effectsless, but it's like a droning string or something. And like, I want to drone all the ones in the same key together now. I'm like, this sounds so sick. Like, why didn't I just wait like 10 years to have like all these songs like not be recorded, and then record like a 5-hour, like fucking crazy long, like, I don't know if I can swear on the air, but just like a really long thing, you know?
Yeah, no, I would definitely imagine, well, the kind of super 1 hour long minimalist, like basically plucking one string at a time and then adding the second.
It'd be beautiful.
One,
yeah. And like, I just love, I'm so intimidated by long songs. So it's like fun to think about like my whole work as like one long song that can be kind of knitted together.
Oh, wow. That's
awesome. I never really thought about it like that, but that's kind of how these performances have started to take shape.
You get a concept for the final Wendy Rosenberg album whenever you're
Yeah, and then I'll die.
One song that I want, but cool, so on that note, speaking of works and music and songs, I should point out to
sorry, knocking out a cold.
Fine. I can cut it out and editing.
Thank you.
And yeah, what was I saying that distracted me? Yeah, so
yeah, it's pretty gross.
When, the last time I so you perform and also booked the show actually was La Lumière Collective in 2019. So at the time you had released Time Machine, Its Shape Is Your Touch. Since then you released Auto, which I actually was seeing you play songs from that album at the time. So the album was really actually familiar when it came out, but it was all this production from Nick Zanker, Mr. Lies, who also shout out because he actually introduced us to each other.
So sweet without, Nick, an autumn friend.
Yeah, without Nick, there would be no Johnny Boy Wendy Eisenberg. And there would also
not
be Otto.
He's really the architect.
I have to say also his production on Otto is, oof, like definitely there's some, lots of range and diversity and dynamics in what he does.
He's an amazing thinker and doer.
So that one is sort of a solo album, but with production and other people playing on it. But it, I suppose the songs, like the songwriting and the stories and all that, come from a very personal place. Then
yes.
During the lockdown, you also released the, am I saying this right, Dehiscence?
Perfectly, yeah.
Perfect.
Dehiscence.
And Bent Wing, which I consider your really like personal solo song albums. And
yeah,
the more,
they're
like,
extremely personal.
Yeah. Lyrics, which I will get to in a bit, but then with no lyrics, we had Cellini's Hello and Bloodletting. I can, this is 2020, 2020, 2021. So yeah, five solo albums between 20 and 2021. That's an accomplishment. I think you can say you have a music career if you've done that amount
yes,
of albums
somehow.
In that amount of time.
I've clawed my way up to the somewhere.
I guess in your own words, I mentioned this earlier to you, I really like the description for Bent Wing, because that's the one that came actually the last, it was like November 5th, 2021 last year, in the press release you say, I wrote most of Bent Wing as 2020 promise crossed into and eventually failed to become 2021. During the writing period, I released a great many records, indeed you did, records that I'm incredibly proud of, that I thought would be the crown of coronation of my career. The flowering purpose of the endless drives of Odo, the mushroom growing out of the rotting self, the world of Dehiscence, the cryptic pattern under the ashes of Eddie Trick's Tell Me I'm Bad, the wash of color around Celine's Halo, the blood of Bentwig's October Twin, Bloodletting. That is a very, what's the word I'm looking for? it was eloquent. It's a very eloquent way of describing your albums. It really, I like how you see them as different experiences and different selves. That really inspires me. So,
thank you.
I don't know where I'm going with this, but basically,
I love a compliment on my writing.
Very different. Come from a very different place. Like some are very intimate, like introspective place, and then those that I really. Like how in the way you talk about your practice is always the machine aspect of the guitar, and like the, even in your own gender, like being non-binary, the like guitar and what that means, and so yeah, I like that kind of divide that you have, the like very personal, intimate, comes from the heart, and then it's like, no, this is the machine and this is how I play this instrument, and very mechanical, very like cold, and that's it. Then when you mention that live performance of bridging both, I'm like, that makes sense. So there's kind of the very machine and the very like human part, like lyrics and blending both.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I'm really touched that that reaches you and that you brought it up, because it's been like a constant like meditation or something through my writing or whatever. Because I think the older I get, the warmer the guitar feels. Like,
nice.
So I kind of have this hilarious like I mean, I'm not like in any way significantly older than when I was saying that stuff more often, but it's been literally like 2 years at most. But when I, or yeah, four, I don't even care, but
hey,
but
yeah, making the cameo.
Yeah, that's Juno. Juno's amazing. But yeah, I mean, it's so funny. Like, I feel like there's such a sense of prosthesis in the world. Like, we hold our phones and they become a part of us, and we're on this computer. And like, the way that I'm seeing you, it's like I try to forget that there's a separation, but I can't forget that there's a separation. And I don't think that the guitar is a machine that works quite that way. Like, I think it feels prosthetic, but the way that I feel the guitar now is like so intimate that I practice because I love to, but I don't feel like I have to like kill myself practicing. And it just, it feels like in a lot of ways easier than speaking. And yes, so it's amazing to like have this machine that at this point speech feels more like a machine than playing. And which has been an amazing thing to happen in my songs, because like, you know, I've written a whole lot of songs during that whole release period, but I haven't released any of them. And I, like, there's been another Editrix record since then, and there's like, I wrote this commission for this Roulette, which is a venue in New York. Like, I got this amazing chance to write like a piece for them, or to perform there. And some of my songs went there, which is like a jazz place. And just seeing the guitar instead of a machine and more as like a magic carpet or something, like corny as that could sound, like,
no, it feels, it feels truer. You're like, your main tool of expression, basically.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's funny, like, I started taking voice lessons because the voice parts that I write for these songs are really hard, and I feel good at guitar and like way less accomplished as a singer. And I think doing that, I mean, it's so hard, singing is the hardest thing, but doing that I think has like familiarize the guitar or something as like, I don't know, as much of a machine as the human body. Like, because when you walk or something, it feels, it's like the inspiration for so many different like machines, and there's so many different ways that things go together to move. And I don't know, I feel like my thinking on that hasn't shifted, but it's deep.
Yeah, I feel like you just have your own thought patterns with the guitar. Basically, you have a way of syncing with the guitar that it's like you wouldn't, other people don't sing that way with the guitar. So I feel like, you know, you don't seem to be like really in the traditional, you seem to really find your own expression with it.
Thank you.
Also, it's just the way you express what you do on the guitar. There's no other way of expressing that any other way. Yeah. So
it feels this way, and that's really sweet of you to say, because like, it's an instrument many people play, so I feel that's, I'm really proud of that accomplishment, you know?
See, this is a bit funny of us touring together, me being a big fan of your music. No, this is it, like, Nick sending me Time Machine and being like, you're really gonna, like, love this person. Most people wouldn't assume that about me because I'm not a guitar person, really, you know? It's like, it's, people mostly associate electronic and, you know, all that to me, which is like, not really true. You know, Nick Drake is one of my favorite artists, but I don't listen to Nick Drake as like, I know that whatever he's doing on the guitar, the tuning and is incredible, but there's not this like, oh, wow, the guitar. It's just like, oh, wow, Nick, and just body and body. So, you know, it's funny that we're playing these shows together, and I'm like, okay,
I
don't know
sense.
What my audience is, or, but I don't think people expect beats and like an electronic show and all that, but it's like, oh yeah, why am I touring with like some, you know, guitar playing, like really like prepared? But it's like, this is just, I relate and connect to your work in a way that would a guitarist who just wants to listen to it, to hear guitar music, wouldn't connect that way, basically.
Well, I think, you know, I'm grateful to you booking this tour for 1,000 different reasons, but I think part of the reason it makes sense is that we both view these things as, I mean, it sounds really elemental, but like we try to make music with our tools rather than let our tools be the focus. And it's funny, like the reason that I'm kind of harping on this idea of like the guitar as machine and like how my thinking has developed is like less that I want everyone to hear my dissertation on like how I think, but more that like, what we're both doing and what I think all artists who believe in this kind of communication are doing is reaching through a tool to speak to something true to them. And I think I get worried that thinking about the guitar publicly as a, or however tiny publicly as a machine, or like as like I am a guitarist or whatever, it can kind of, if that's in the foreground, then it's easy to take for granted that I'm like using the guitar to make music. Like, like music is this miraculous thing that it's almost like hilarious to say music is this thing, but like music is a miracle and it's totally crazy. And the fact that I've dedicated so much time to guitar just makes it the easiest place for me to express that. And that feels like a gift. And I love that about your music too. Like it seems like it's about communication, not like, ooh, here's my beat. Like, you know,
no, that's it.
It's music.
Yeah.
Fuck a guitar.
But it's funny. Speaking of gear, I've had a really interesting experience because my first piece of live gear that I ever bought was my SP-404. Mm-hmm. And you know, before that, I wasn't planning to ever do live shows, and it's basically seeing people use that machine. I was like, oh, you could play loops and like effect them, and see, that might be a way of actually playing live. So I guess I bought it in 2014. I got it replaced by the new one, right here, the SP-404 MK2, which is amazing. So my live shows will be with this new one. But yeah, I just had this like very weird attachment. No, my old SP-404 is busted. You know, it's been in my bag for like 8 years. It's like,
yeah, nuts, knocking
like,
around.
Shitty. There's like, but it's just like, also, this has been with me all my live shows. Like, I don't think I must have had two live shows where I didn't have the SP-404 on stage. Maybe three. But it's like, I've traveled around the world with this little thing, and it's had my sounds, and it's been there for my shitty shows, it's been there for my good shows, it's been out.
Yeah.
It's just, I had this weird, I almost did a post about it, because it's like, you know, there's so much like gear fetishism, especially in electronic music, and I hate it, I don't like synths. I mean, it's not that I don't like synths, I don't use them to make my music, I don't mind hearing them, but all these like assumptions people make about my music, and it's just like, it's just editing mostly. I just like having sound sources and making something new with that, and the SP-404 has been that way. So I just weird, like, I didn't want to do like a gear fetishist post of like, oh, my SP-404, but I'm like, this little guy has been with me for like 6 years, and now he won't be on stage with me anymore. Now there's the new guy, and it's like, the new guy is nice, he's great, but little guy was with me for like, I don't know, I just had a really like, once I did a live set with Katrin Debar, Ilang Ilang, we're both using SP-404s on stage, and we called ourselves Superpowers 404.
So cute!
That's it, my old SP-404 is my Superpower 404, so
I can cry. I mean, like,
it sits there, but it's like, it's, yeah, something spiritual. I don't know. And it's like, it's not the same way people talk about the SP-404 online or stuff like that. They get really geeky. It's like, I mean, it's been my little buddy who's been on stage with me and has had my fingers on him all fucking,
yeah,
7 years or so, 8 years.
All of my gear, not all of my gear, but I'd say like 95% of what I own, I've had since high school or like early college. And like the guitar that I'm playing on this tour, I've had since 10th grade, I think. And like the amp I've had since I was 18. And I keep trying because I really want there to be a solid body between the instrument that I'm playing and like, which is this beautiful Gibson, and my Jazzmaster, which is like the screechiest thing ever. Mm. But I feel like new things are harder because like they're like, it's okay if it's like a pedal, because like a pedal is like this, it's like a translation device almost, but I really relate to how you're talking about your SP-404, because when I'm trying to get something between those, like this guitar that could fill in something of the gap between these tones so that I could travel like easier and do more things, it's next to impossible because I've put decades now, in some cases, of my life into certain instruments, and I feel like they're like my little buddies. Like it doesn't, like I don't care that it's an amazing guitar. I mean, I do because I'm so lucky. This guitar is like a complete artifact. It's like a late 50s Gibson 175 archtop. It's like the dream of a certain jazz guitarist. But yeah, it's just my friend, you know? Like, I don't want to be, like, a total freak about it. Like, I just want to play it and make it sing if I can.
Story. Like, those things come out, they become alive at night, and they just, like, you know, if you sell your guitar, it's just going to be like, oh, Wendy, why did you sell it? You're going to hear it in the, like, night, and it's going to do this whole adventure to try and get back in your home and all that, and it's just not worth it.
That's such a cute idea. It's probably true. I mean, I bought, with the stimulus money, a guitar that I thought would be right between the two, and it's so not my guitar. It's just, like, sitting there glaring at me in the corner, but I'm like too lazy to sell it. I should have brought it on tour and like tried to sell it here, but But yeah, I really feel that. And I did want to also say that I'm a huge fan of the guitar player Bill Frisell. And I remember seeing him play in Rochester, where I am now, in like 2014 at like the Jazz Festival or something. And there's all these like little stuffed animals, like little stuffed animal deers and shit. And it was like adorable. And I was like, I bet those are his little buddies. Like,
yeah.
I bet he brings them on stage and like has them there because like they're as much part of the music and the sweetness.
Yeah, some on the wider and everything. Like, okay, I want 36 meals. They better be like,
yeah. I need like six stuffed deer.
For the whole, like, you got the tour bus for the whole stuffed
animals. Yeah, there's like a hot tub and then like a million Beanie Babies or something. Anyway. Yeah.
But, wow. So another, I kind of thought about this, and I was like, should I mention it on air? And then the SP44 talk, I was thinking also, sorry, I'm geeking out, but no, actually, like, an artist that was very vocal about, like, how he had cut up with the past, Rap Ferrara, Milo, he's, like, one of my favorite rappers, but that's it, like, change his name. And, like, clearly the last album under the Milo name is, like, let go of all your preconceptions of me. I'm, like, moving on. And even I sold him weed when he came to Montreal. So he's at my place and saw my SP44. I was like, ah, you got one of those. Yeah, I used to love those also. But my abuser, and I got who he was referring to, is also, like, one of the pioneers on this thing. So I don't use that anymore. I don't use the SP44 anymore. And when I saw him play, he did all, like, new Rap Ferrara material. There's no, like, Milo songs. So it's kind of, now this was, like, clearly, like, I'm, like, no more pass for me, like, cut up. And then I saw him live again, I guess in June, and he had an SP44 on stage and was playing Milo songs. And I didn't dare, like, ask him at the end, like, oh, so, you know, there's been some kind of, like, forgiveness or something. You've gotten back to, like... So it really got me that, yeah, someone who had such an association with, like, I can't even use this tool on stage because I associate it to someone, and those songs are kind of able to, like, get over that and come back to them. And I feel like I've had a bit the same with Johnny Ripper. Definitely, it was when I changed my name and when I moved on, it's like, okay, Johnny Ripper was, like, all my failures of my teenage year, and I need to start fresh and good. And now I'm kind of, like, 10 years after doing that, like, revisiting that material, and be like, you don't give yourself enough credit, man, like, sometimes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's funny sometimes, all this weird, this, like, this distanciation, like, detachment, and then you start, like, kind of getting back to it again, and things would build themselves in a different light.
Yeah, I relate so deeply because, like, I mean, on the one hand, there's a practical thing of not being a local to Canada. And so there's, like, a chance that if by chance someone's heard my work and wants to see me specifically rather than just going to a show, then they might want to hear a song from the past, or maybe they connected a lot to Time Machine and then are tolerating the rest of it or whatever, like, who knows. But there's, like, that element of sharing. But then on the other hand, like, I'm so glad to hear that you're, like, listening to that and you're like, oh, that was sick, because it's really amazing the things that we're able to make. And there's a level of youthful hubris that I think is really valuable. And I mean, in my relationship, like, my partner is, like, he's a fan of my music, but he didn't know it before he met me, which is, like, the ideal. And, like, I just love that so much because... Yeah. He'll be like, wow, Time Machine is, like, you're on some mystic shit. And I just wouldn't give myself that credit or say that about myself. But then I'll listen to it through, like, my imagination of his ears. And I'm like, oh, yeah, like, this actually has a lot more depth. Like, it was, like, a freaky time. And you can, like, hear it. And, like, then I can think, as I write songs again, like, what lessons can I learn from myself as a writer then? Or, like, what songs from that period, like, do I want to, I mean, and actually it ends up being all of them because there's like 9 on that record total, but yeah, it's a really cool period of writing, and like to hear it through someone else's ears and to hear it through the ears of the past and to travel that way is just like the coolest thing about having a back catalog.
Yeah. No, I think also clearly pandemic helped with that, there wasn't as much to like going forward and there was like more to like going back and visiting material because you have time now, and there wasn't as much to think of like, oh, I mean, you could still do, because we both did a lot of material also during that time. But,
definitely.
But, I mean, that wasn't a given for everyone, though. I felt like it's really kind of divided between those who, like, just like, okay, I have all this time, I have all this thing, I'm being as productive as I can, and then those, like, I don't know how to make music anymore, I don't know how to do what I do, how am I supposed to make it? So, kind of very different dynamics, but Yeah, that was definitely for me a bit. I mean, there was also the fact that I realized it had been 10 years that I had actually started music, that my first album was like 2011.
Wow.
So yeah, no, it was just kind of like, oh, a cycle. I just did a cycle. I've been doing this for 10 years. And so yeah, it was a really reflective time, basically.
I wish I had that thing when I was younger, because like I've been making music steady since I was like 12 or 11 or whatever, but I'm just thinking about what it would feel like to release an album like in 2011. Like my first like Time Machine was like 2017. Like I feel kind of recent.
That's interesting, because I guess I had the opposite way. I mean, I'm self-taught. I just started making music on my mom's computer when I was 14, basically. It was like, oh, this garage band. Oh, cool. You can make notes and just, I don't know how to do this, but somehow it evolved into something. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy for me to be like, it took me less than like 2-3 years of fucking around on DAW, like music software, to then just be like, okay, now I'm 15 and I'm releasing my own albums online. It's like, yeah, good that I started that early, because imagine doing that like at 27 or something.
Oh my god, yeah, like the boldness it would take.
So, no, I am grateful for that. There was just this like spark of like, oh wow, you can just make music, and then it's like, yeah, that's suddenly gonna become your life now and define
it's so
everything
funny.
You do.
I feel like, you know, I'm 30 and that's not really that old at all, but it feels, because so many of my friends are like, I want to say recovering electronic musicians, even though they still make electronic music, but I do think that there is this like teen boom or something, and I see that kind of thing happen and I'm like, wow, that is amazing. Like, I can't imagine what it would feel like to be allowed to make whatever music you wanted at a young age, because I was like, I don't even know what I wanted. Like, did I want to be a jazz guitarist? Like, I think I really did, but why? And I committed so hard to that until I was like, I don't even know. I'm still pretty committed to it. Mm. And when you're talking about the Milo situation, like, I thought in my brain that I wasn't playing straight ahead jazz when I was writing songs.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I can't do that. That's like the site of all the major traumas in my life, which is true. But then, it's so funny. I the songs I write are like fucking jazz standards, basically. And so, I mean, they're different than that, but like the way that I conceive of the form is like, the DNA is like, maybe there's like two, it's like between like an orangutan and a human. Like,
yeah.
So it's this kind of funny, like,
playing jazz at the same time.
You can't really escape it, yeah. But in that culture, like, if you try to make, like, a jazz record and then release it when you're, like, a kid and you're not, like, one of those, like, jazz phenom kids,
Well, that's it. That's where we come from, two different worlds. I just had the computer on the internet and I didn't have this, like, school of thought of, like, oh, this is how, you know, even for electronic music, even that, there's, like, people that really, like, oh, techno is this, house is this, like, there's
so specific.
Ways of categorizing it. And even for me, it's, like, some people consider me an ambient artist, some people see me more as like instrumental hip-hop and all that. I'm like, all those things are technically true, but also not true at the same time. And I think, yeah, my practice was basically just, I was just trying to copy, like emulate whatever, like, you know, the Boards of Canada or Fortet were doing at the time, but not knowing how they were doing it, so just doing my own thing and getting a result and just be like, alright, I guess this is good enough, like. It's funny, I got the Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind soundtrack recently, and it's funny to be like, yeah, there's one of my songs, House by Johnny Ripper. That was me trying to learn the Eternal Sunshine theme on the piano and not managing, and just making my own song with whatever I could play from the same like chords or something like that. And
just, I love like, that so much.
You know, I was like 15, and just like, oh, you know, I didn't expect this song to ever like reach anyone, and now it's like the result it had. But yeah, it's like, I guess I'm grateful that I just had this like childlike ignorance of just like, there's no rules to this, there's just, you know, you just have the timeline, you just have GarageBand, and anything is possible. If I want to put upright bass with like some banger, like that Gabba beats, you can do that. Nobody's gonna, the computer's not gonna be like, hey, this is not a genre, like, you can't, those two things don't go together, man, like, you're gonna piss off a lot of people if you do that. So
it's so funny, I mean, people take these arbitrary things so seriously, and I just love that, because it makes just the very simple act of remembering that it's all music seem revolutionary, even though it's totally not. Like, or maybe it is, but like, it just, it's very convenient, because then there'll be people like us who are like, I'm just trying to figure it out, I don't know, and then they get to they get to be doing something new just totally incidentally. Just because it's like, oh, this is all great. Mm. I love that feeling.
It's also, I mean, I just, like, for a non-artist, imagining an artist create, I think they have this thing that, you know, you open the studio and it's like, and you just take a deep
inspiration
and then like, this song is gonna come out of me. It's like, no, if you were to film me in my studio, it'd be like, oh, it's me just making a random loop or like trying something, like, spending 40 minutes working on something, just boom, this sucks, and just like deleting it. And you know, imagine someone watching that, be like, the artist is creating, like, where is he going with this? And then you're just like, nah, this thing doesn't work, you just remove it. It's like, but I watched you like 40 minutes, like, mold this thing and create. It's like, yeah, but this didn't work for the track, like, just removed it. But it's like, I had a relative of mine ask me recently, like, they're trying to ask me about music, but you know, they know nothing about music, they don't know how to approach what I do. They keep asking me when I'm gonna play an instrument, and yeah, one of my aunts asked me, like, how much time does it take me to make a song, like, as a work thing, you know, if I like 5 to 9, like, okay, I can make a song in this time. And it's like, it's very funny to think about, because I'm like, well, if I actually had to calculate that, you know, it's like, do you count me watching the movie where the, like, piano sample comes from? Because that's part of the process. I had to watch a film and hear the piano loop to be like, oh, this, I want to sample this and use it in a track. So do you count that 1.5 hours in it or not? But and then, yeah, there's all me, like, taking the loop. Like, and, you know, sometimes it just stands there in my, like, sample library for, like, months or something until I find something that fits with it. Do you count those months of, like, between the scene? Because I need, you know, it's just so abstract to me to just actually think about, like, how much. Someone asked me that for a live set also once. I played a live show and the first thing someone asked, it was like an audio visual set with like visuals, like, edited to what I was playing. And yeah, someone asked me how many hours I put into that. And it's like, you can calculate that shit. Like, you can actually, like, be like, yeah, this amount of work time is like so abstract, but yeah.
And it's all just non-traditional commitments to what time can be, you know, that's like the best. I mean, everything is the best part of making music, but...
I just love this idea that there's a formal, like, you can come into the studio from this hour to this hour and you will have a song. And it's like, wow, that's amazing to imagine that. Like,
I mean, I feel like the one, like, I wrote this song this spring that I'm just, like, incredibly proud of because it feels like it's existed for a very long time. And it's just so funny, like... Because I sat down and I wrote it. Like, it probably... That one probably took, like, an hour. They never take that much longer than that. Mm. But there's so much, like... And if they take longer than that, usually I don't like them as much, which is kind of confusing. But there's, like, this weird thing where, like, all of a sudden, you're just sitting, like... I don't know, did you see Get Back?
Get Back?
The, like, Beatles, like, 6-hour documentary.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, or maybe it's longer, I think it's 8 hours, but I watched
the whole
course,
sessions, okay.
Because I'm that kind of guy or whatever, I'm a boomer. But there's this scene where he writes the song Get Back, which, like, isn't, like, it's not the most amazing Beatles song in the world. But it's,
to be honest. Like,
no, it's not. It's fraught.
Yeah.
But seeing Paul McCartney just sit there and, like, write it, you've never seen... And it's really different than the computer editing thing, because that's, like, a little... It looks more static, even though there's so much going on.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing him just play it on the bass and, like, figure it out was, like, you never see anyone else writing songs. Like, it's almost like watching someone, like, what's up?
The documentary I had that recently was I watched Some Kind of Monster by Metallica.
I love. That's, like, my favorite music documentary.
And the one that really just got me is, yeah, just him trying to write the lyrics. And it's just, it's such this, like, situational thing where it's like, oh, I'm the singer-songwriter, I need to write lyrics. And just, like, they always find, like, a situation going on. Like, somebody said something in the review and they're like, frantic, that's good. Like, and you see him start writing lyrics. And it's just like, and it's like a child almost. It's just like, oh, I'm the, like, rock and roll guy and I need to write lyrics for, like, big rock albums. So, like, what can I find as inspiration? And I'm like, oh, okay, that situation. Like,
yeah, you're like a little groundhog.
It's just like,
it's an amazing thing. Like, God, and writing lyrics is so, it gets funnier and funnier the more committed you are to, like, abstract, like, forms of communication, where, like, that song that I'm proud of, like, the words together, like, they're, it's kind of loosely about colonialism, but it's, like, also about me being really angry at someone I used to work with, and, like, the situation, like, you almost can't really detect it because it's all these, like, free-floating images, and it's so funny because, like, the Metallica, like, those lyrics are so funny. Like, my lifestyle determines my death style is like the funniest lyric ever. But like, you can't really say that like, that doesn't really feel frantic until you like put it within the song. It just feels like hilarious and kind of like stupid and great.
Well, that, you know, you hear it, it's like, okay, it's a rock song and it all comes together, and it's like, it's but just seeing the, yeah. like, the man like just with his notepad be like,
it just looks so banal. Like, yeah. it's like the dumbest thing ever to do. And then, like, I mean, that's a special case, but like, sometimes, like, the most banal thing of just sitting and being like, oh, fine, I guess I'm bored, but I don't want to buy anything or like watch TV. I guess I'll just like write music. And then it comes out as like this amazing thing. Like, but you imagine the writer doing it. I think people outside of the music, like people who don't write music, think that it's like this. They have like a velvet covered table yeah. and there's like sconces and stuff, but like it's usually just like, I don't know, dude, like what?
Is someone okay. fucking around on the keyboard for an hour and a half just being like,
is it good? Yeah.
Like just air farts like all over the place.
Oh my god, yeah. Just so many. And like also every song I write, I usually like, you can find like four like ascending like voice memos of me trying to figure it out and like listening back myself playing it. So like it's like location like 72 blah 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 blah, and then like song final with a question mark, and wow. like you can hear the progress. It's like, so I should do something with those at some point, but they're kind of embarrassing. Like I can barely sing on tune anyway, but it's even worse there. Anyway,
so okay, we were speaking about lyrics and you mentioned that song about like noticing. I had an experience yesterday. I was listening to your album The Hissons, just being like, oh, let's listen to Wendy's music, and I've had a love triangle situation recently with like my roommate and like her ex, and it's like super weird, like something happened and then the next day everything was weird. I was just like sitting there listening to The Hissons and the song Patterns came on, and
God.
That one is like the air was becoming heavy and the room was like stretched. It was like, oh my god, these lyrics are like just so real right now. But it's like, it could be me saying them to the person, it could be me saying it to myself, it could be like, I'm like, who's actually addressing what to who in this? But it's just like the way you want that song and these sentiments are just, yeah, I really had a moment of like, fuck, Wendy is a fucking great lyricist. Like, Wendy, like, you know, I mean, that's it. I do pay attention to lyrics. I love poetry, but I am still, like, I guess more interested. But to really have a song where I'm like, I'm just reading the lyrics and, like, just focusing on them and just every word, like, just, like a puzzle yeah. just, like, places itself. So, yeah, I was kind of, I don't know, with all this talk about lyrics and writing, how did you start from, like, little brain farts to just actually getting to a song like that, that then I get an experience where I'm like, wow, this describes perfectly. So many things are happening right now. Like,
well, I'm sorry.
It got so. I had a hard discussion last night, and I guess
we're on good terms. I can't wait to talk about it in the car.
You'll get more details. You'll get the juicy details.
Good, I love that. I love hearing about how people like, care about our doing. But, I mean, that song, like, I wrote it in a... You can imagine it pretty similar, because you can't just like invent. Well, I can't just like invent something that sad. I mean,
no.
I was, yeah. Well, the Hissons generally is like it's a really deep moment in my life, because I had just gotten out of a relationship that I'd committed a lot of myself and my life to. Like, I'd moved to a different part of Massachusetts and I was just really committed to this person, and like he was slipping away, like the whole album, even before I knew we were breaking up, like I wrote some of those songs, and it was just like this sense of distance from my life that eventually made me feel like I genuinely was losing my mind, because I was incredibly gaslit, like not necessarily by him though a little bit, but mostly by his friend group, and their cruelty was just so ridiculous. Like, I don't really want to go into that many details on air, because it's just my own shit, but
yeah, it comes from a really personal place, we can tell that.
But what's crazy though, like what that album taught me about lyric writing is that like saying as straightforwardly the stuff that's happening in that song, like which is literally just like me like covered in snot like talking to him like girl, but yeah. It's also like the more direct you are, the more confusing it is to hear. And the more applicable it is to almost like every situation. And so sometimes when I perform that song now, I'm like, that guy sucks. Like, ugh, hate him. And then sometimes I'm like, that girl that he left me for is like even worse. Actually, mostly I'm like that because she is. There's a lot there. But but there's also this part that's like what if the narrator is actually me? It's kind of like if you read The Trial by Kafka and then you're like, but what if he's guilty? Like, it's like that feeling where like there's so much more depth that happens after the fact. But if you're writing it really genuinely, it almost doesn't matter what words you're writing because like the feeling behind it like ensures a level of universality, which is a really insane amount of trust to have in language. But it is real, I think, in music.
I mean, it's also, I used to be so cynical about like, I used to shit on people who like were always doing songs about you and I and just be like, ooh, wow, original, a song about like you did this to me. And there's like in albums, it's like, oh, there's always a love song and then the breakup song and then the love song. Like, one moment we're all together and then it's like, no, you're the worst person. And it's like, wow, it seems very like trivial and mundane. But then, I don't know, I guess more personal experiences in my life. Definitely like The Hissons, like, it's a breakup album, straight up. It's not like trying to cover it all that. It's like explicitly. No. And so it's just like, really changed my opinion on kind of like, these are just like universal experiences that just like, they're the pinnacle of human emotion, like human emotionality, like experience. So of course you have to sing about those experiences. Of course people need to like get that same feeling. They're like, yeah, everybody's had in a breakup, it's hard, and everybody goes through it. But just that feeling of just hearing a song that like just actually like pinpoints in a way that's like personal to you, it's like, yeah, just humans just need it. So I kind of went from like, they're like, oh yeah, how original and how like basic and like cynical, to just be like, it is the most basic human experience. Of course we like have to sing about it. Like,
and there's also infinite directions that you can see it from. Like that album is, it's a breakup album, of course, but it's also like how a breakup can completely shatter your relationship to the world, because like what you're doing in a very committed relationship is creating like a world within the world, which is also kind of what happens when you write music, is like you're superimposing a feeling of time onto a more macro feeling of time.
Yeah.
And then in that you just create like a world, this total world building thing. And
yeah, that album also has a lot to do with time also. I feel like aging and like kind of that, then you're in a relationship where you're like, you have a common future, and then that common future, you don't have it anymore. It's like, what is your future now? And
I feel like all my albums,
you reflect a lot on like kind of like aging, but like, you know, maturity, but also just literally like just aging and becoming an old person. And
yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, I don't know. I just can't believe like the fortune of being a musician in that sense, because you have this like this relationship to time that's so deep. And I think like my salvation or whatever, like as I was getting over that situation, which luckily I'm like 100% over it now, which rules, is that like, you know, I do feel a level of comfort with aging that's like, probably I wouldn't if I didn't write those songs, but also just the idea that you can be with someone and it doesn't have to feel that hard. Like there's so many, and maybe most people just discover this by like being in relationships and then breaking up and then being in more relationships. But like, I have such a like hyper analytical, like hyper emotional thing that like extracting it and putting it into this other universe and this other sense of time is like genuinely like healing for me. It just melts my heart to know that it's like helpful to anyone who hears it, because like, God, that was like maybe the most miserable I'd ever been in my life. And that's saying something, because I have a lot of feelings.
Yeah.
So yeah. But the other funny thing is he wrote a song called like, he's like, I wanted to be more than a cause for writing. That selfish motherfucker. I like couldn't believe it. And like, you know, you're going to write an album called Out of Duplica, like after we broke up, and it's going to be boring. Actually, it's fine. He's a really cool way of thinking about harmony. He's a great singer too. Anyway, I'm just being a shithead, like just talking now.
It's just funny because you just mentioned that, and my friend Aaron Fuglig just posted recently, like, oh, have you ever sang a song about someone and them being present in the crowd?
Oh my god, I sang that song and he was doing sound for it. Can you imagine?
Okay, I've had the opposite. I've had like doing sound for a band and they're like singing a song that's clearly about me. It was like my ex-roommate and it's a really weird song also because it's like it's something he specifically would say to me and then the lyric was like, you're hiding in your womb. Why are you hiding? Why are you hiding? And it's like, I'm fucking... in my womb.
I'm writing music,
like,
dude.
Like I said, I'm like, I don't need to be with you. And I don't know, it's like, long story, but yeah, really weird feeling to just be standing there doing sound, be like, ah, I get this song. I get what you're referring to. And
it sucks. I mean, it sounds like you said it was a band, but like mine's like a solo set. So doing sound, you just
well, I mean,
like,
there's a band, but it's a solo artist with who I, or the singer with who I've had experiences who's like singing lyrics. It's like clearly about me, and he was kind of the front man basically of the band. So,
dude, yeah, like my ex was like doing sound, but since my setup's really easy, he was like lying down on like this like couch near the sound booth and like watching me. Whoa. And also like the girl who was my roommate who he left me for. Like was like talking over my set, like when I played that song, and I was just like, I think I'm gonna like transcend my body right now. Like this is like the most.
You're like you're on stage and it's like weird triangle setup. Like it's.
I know. I'm like, and then you know that's actually why I moved from Massachusetts because like I have a lot of friends in Western Mass still, thank goodness, but like I couldn't. It's just so small, you know,
you can't escape,
and they're going to do their weird asshole thing where they never leave Massachusetts. And I'm just going to let them have that whole state. So they deserve it, frankly. I think they both live in Vermont now, but whatever. Yeah, they can have it.
So. Yeah. On that note, what they can't have is Montreal.
yes, here we are.
They won't be
70 years later.
We don't have to... I don't think I have anyone that I'm trying to avoid who will be at the shows, and so I don't have to play
great.
A song for them. So it's we can play the good songs. We can play the songs about the people we like.
Yeah, bring them over here.
On that note, it was a real pleasure talking to you. And
you too.
You will be playing our shows, and we are in Montreal on Sunday 23rd. We are doing it at Lorbeat, which is a venue but also plant shop in the Old Port. And I think the only venue I've ever been in to see things in the Old Port is Centrophile. So, really nice little venue, plants, food, drinks, and experimental weird music. And we will have Wendy Eisenberg making the Montreal set. I will not be playing as Johnny Void, I will be playing with Sarah Paget and Maya Kuroki, a Celestial Cabbage Foundation. We are playing a live on-air set in the second hour of this broadcast. The concept of Celestial Cabbage Foundation is that it's a vocal landscape duo based around a cult of cabbage. And I'm
sure.
Joining them this time. So yeah, just three people making weird vocalizations and cabbage-themed. That's what you can expect at Lorbeat on the 23rd. And also, Kai Brooks, James Goddard, and Robert Grieve. My reason for booking Kai Brooks is that when I used to live at the plant, they used to do this series called Noise Sunday, which was like every Sunday morning, and it was just people doing experimental sets, like trying things out, or trying duos, or like just if you wanted just a space to test something and they want to do it at an actual show. And then that's it, they did this series Noise Sunday for I guess 2-3 years with Johnny Sadler and Catherine Debar. And yeah, it used to be in a venue with lots of plants, and so weird music with lots of plants and all that. I figured on a Sunday, I figured like this is sort of a Noise Sunday, but just not in the afternoon. Because we
I
need
love
to drive
noise Sunday. That's just so nice.
So yeah. Well, Wendy, I'll be seeing you in 3 days in person. This was a lovely conversation. This was definitely not the experience I described last time of having the artists who didn't want to talk about their music. We've definitely covered a lot.
We did it. Excuse me, moi. Yeah, I'm so excited to hang. This is going to be great. And thanks for having me on the show.
So that's it. Come see us at Lorbeat at... It's 406 Notre-Dame-Est. I finally thought about looking up the address. I figured that's the detail people need. And we'll be starting at, I guess, 7 or 8 p.m. See, this is what I think about doing when I'm at the radio in person. I have everything up, all the details, and then I do it in my room, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you're supposed to say the details on there for people. So
that's the worst part.
Yeah. But yeah, Wendy Eisenberg, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Sunday
it's a pleasure.
23rd. And yeah, the second part, Celestial Cabbage Foundation coming up live on air after this ad. Tune in and join the void. Tuned into CKUT 90.3 FM on Underground Sounds. It is 5 to 9. If you are wondering about what you just heard, that was an interview with Wendy Eisenberg from Brooklyn now. Sorry for the Massachusetts reference in the interview, Wendy, but Brooklyn-based artist now. They will be performing in Ontario this week with me and then a Montreal show at L'Orbit in the Old Port. I tried having the address with me once again and I couldn't, they wouldn't show up on my phone. You can look up all the details online. It will be Sunday, October 23rd at L'Orbit, Wendy Eisenberg, and finally Celestial Cabbage Foundation, the duo project of Maya Kuroki and Sarah Page, who are both in studio with me right now. We are about to perform in the second half of this episode, live in studio, give you a pre-taste, the mise en bouche of what we will be doing with our bouche on Sunday. And yeah, thank you once again to Wendy for that time. If you're wondering about the music playing in the background during the interview, that was Eiko Ishibashi Drive My Car soundtrack, and currently it is Wendy's track The Designated Mourner. We're gonna take a short ad, which is an ad for another show I have the following week, but I'll let Stefan talk about that one because he did the ad. But yes, it's a Everyday Ago CKUT 90.3 FM co-presentation. I'm just focusing on the shows I have this week before getting to that one. So, but yeah, until then, tune in and join the void.
Seattle-based cellist Lori Goldston will be in duet with trumpet player Greg Kelly on Saturday, October 29th at La Sotarena, 4848 Saint-Laurent. Join us. Local artist Leon Lauder, in collaboration with Scattered Ensemble and En Nau. That is October 29th. Doors, 8 p.m., 4848 Saint-Laurent, downstairs. Tickets online, $12, $15 at the door. Lori Goldston has played with the likes of Cat Power, Nirvana, David Byrne, and has a thriving solo practice. This is an Everyday Ego, CKUT Radio, Howell Arts co-presentation.